Good morning. The Board of County Commission meeting will come to order, and the first item on the agenda is public comment. Anyone wishing to speak to an item that is listed on the agenda, we ask that you do please come forward. State your first and last name and the item that you're speaking on behalf of. Welcome.
Good morning, Commissioners, and Commissioner McCurdy. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Ted Papa George. I am here speaking on item 26. My address is 1212 Buehler Drive. I'm with the Culinary Workers Union. I'm sending greetings from the County Commission from our 60,000 members with the Culinary Workers Union. And we have a couple of our members here today. Item 26 talks about the quarterly economic condition reports that need to be submitted, and Department of Aviation is included in that. We're here to talk today about something that may unfortunately affect the quarterly economic report. So we have contracts that recommend cover over almost 2,000 workers at the airport, and we successfully negotiated great fair contracts, we think, for those workers. But there's a group of employers out there that we're having some difficulty. We're at the end of the line with those employers, unfortunately, and they are what they we call them DBE employers, disadvantaged business enterprise employers. There are 10 employers that cover 20 outlets. And the negotiations, I think it's important to notify this board, we're at the end of the line with these negotiations. It's been 4 years without settling the union contracts. Again, all the other outlets, when you travel and you go through the airport, are covered by great contracts, and those are those folks have their health plans and their pension plans and their wage increases. But the DBE employers do not, and I'll talk a little bit more about them in a second. The cooks and servers there, they're $3 or $4 an hour behind the rest of the workers at the airport. And the latest proposal is to have no wage increases till next year, and it's, I think, 25 cents is where we're at as a wage increase. Not paying the proper amount for health plan or pension plans, so those are in danger too. And you'll hear in the comment from a couple of those workers in a moment. But it's egregious because these as disadvantaged business enterprises, we also know that the Department of Transportation is requiring recertification at the state level across the country for DBEs, and we're also quite concerned that these DBEs, if there was a recertification process, would not survive that. And it's a real problem in addition to that where their workers are being treated poorly. So we are going to ask the County Commission to look at a recertification process, and we're going to come later in the month to the commissioners and your staff with some language to do that and present it at the next meeting. So thank you so much for hearing me. And again, I thank first to Sylvia, you're up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Sylvia Ruiz Orendain. I work for the company Kamimikis for 9 years at the airport. I will not receive any raise for 4 years. And I am not a second-class citizen. We all need better contract. We need your help. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My name is Adam Miller. I work for Jamba Juice at the airport. I make all the sandwiches and products. If you pick one up off the little display case, then I was one in a three chance that I made it. I just want to say that the skill level in the work we do is no different from the 100 or so companies under HMS host. So we definitely deserve the same pay. There is talk that our healthcare might be at risk as well. We deserve the same health insurance. I see no reason why we don't. So we appreciate your help. Thank you.
Thank you.
Paul Katha with the Culinary Union. Just want to make sure that the commissioners are aware that we have a strike deadline of November 14th for the DBEs at the airport. could be short-term, long-term, rolling strikes, but want to make sure that you all have that on your radar. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good morning. Craig Stevens, Cox Communications, 1700 Vegas Drive. Vice Chairman McCurdy, members of the commission, I'm here this morning to express my appreciation regarding items 36 and 48. I knew you were only introducing the ordinance today, but Cox would be remiss if we didn't come forward and thank your staff and you, the commissioners, for all of your hard work in getting the item here today. Parity for all users accessing the right-of-way is critical in ensuring fair and robust competition for broadband customers. Cox has always been proud to pay our fair share, and this ordinance will ensure others will do the same. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else wishing to come forward at this time? Welcome.
This basic public comment or on Cox?
This is the time set aside to speak on an item that is on the agenda. If you would like to speak on anything, you could wait to the conclusion of the
agenda.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no one, we'll close the public hearing and turn over to Manager Schiller.
Commissioners, first item on your agenda is approval of the minutes of the regular meeting on October 7th, 2025.
We have a motion by Commissioner Gibson. Please cast your vote. Motion is adopted.
Commissioners, your next item is approval of the agenda with the inclusion of any emergency items and deletion of any items. Staff is requesting that item number 11 on your consent section be deleted from your agenda.
We have a motion of approval by Commissioner Gibson. Please cast your vote. Motion is adopted.
I now move to the approval of your consent agenda consisting of items number 5 through number 35. Item 11 has been deleted.
We have a motion for approval. Please cast your vote. Motion is adopted.
We'll now move to introduction of ordinances. Item 36 is an ordinance to amend Title 5, Chapter 5.01, and Title 6, Chapter 6.13 of the Clark County Code to provide for granting of a franchise agreement for broadband service and or broadband infrastructure access, require a business license, add definition, establish fees, and providing for other matters properly related thereto and set a public hearing.
We introduce the ordinance and set the public hearing for Tuesday, November 18, 2025 at 10 a.m.
Your next item is an ordinance to amend Clark County Code, Title 2, Chapter 2.70, to rename the Sports and Special Events Department to the Office of Sports and Special Events, revise approval requirements, establish fees, and providing for other matters properly related thereto, and to set a public hearing.
We introduce the ordinance, set the public hearing for Tuesday, November 18, 2025 at 10 a.m.
Your next item is an ordinance to amend Title 4 of the Clark County Code to add a new Chapter 4.01 relating to the imposition of an ad valorem property tax rate in unincorporated areas of Clark County for the purpose of employing police officers with the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department and providing for other matters properly related thereto and set a public hearing.
Thank you. We'll introduce the ordinance, set the public hearing for Tuesday, November 18, 2025 at 10 a.m.
We'll now move to the business section of your agenda. Item 39 is identify emerging issues to be addressed by staff or by the board at future meetings, receive updates on the activities of the various regional boards and commissions, and direct staff accordingly.
Commissioner Kilpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I've been tussling with this local regulations on what we don't do well and blah, 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 right? It's in every study. I spent the weekend studying studies, and So I want to ask this because I am tired of people telling me what we don't do well, and I know that we have a pretty awesome staff that works around the clock, weekends, everything to process things, and people forget, quite frankly, that, you know, we are moved way faster than other states and other jurisdictions by the amount of volume that we have. But I made a list of things that I would like staff to, our planning staff, they know what to do, they know how it works, but I'd like them to actually go out and tell us some items that can't work, right? For many years, there's vacancies. It's getting harder to compete with the cities on the vacancies. So what things can we do to streamline, right? So maybe there's an opportunity to say, hey, home builder A, B, or C, if you actually build within the code and don't ask for any waivers, we can give you a building permit tomorrow. I'd be curious to see if they will actually do that. I doubt it, but let's try it. We could talk about, you know, what the land use process is. We can talk about some of the, I mean, we spent, Commissioner Jones in particular, spent a lot of time on Title 30. Let's use it. Let's figure out some other ways, because I feel like as fast as we are, it's never going to be fast enough. So what else could it be? So are there areas that are adjacent to residential that we could say maybe that makes sense? I mean, it's much like the truck parking that we did, special use permit, right? Things that are outside the ordinary, we can figure that out. We usually do. We don't get zero credit for it. But I mean, if there's things that individual commissioners don't like, maybe that's an opportunity where they could say, yeah, if you want to build ranch estates with no waivers and all that, don't forget there's some guidelines in District B, that single story, maybe there's no balconies and some of the other ones. But I really just want to give staff the chance to do it without somebody giving me a list of what they think they know best. Because I have been here way too long, many would say. And over the past 10 years, I've been through at least six lists, which we've done 99% of it, and it hasn't changed the process. It hasn't changed any of it. So as we go into the housing crunch, which is getting harder and harder for us, and we know where the rental market is, it's feed to death, I would like to see what our staff can come up with and let them drive this train, and we as the board can be innovative and support some of their ideas. So it's very broad, because I think our staff has what it takes to go out and see what everybody else is doing. I don't think that they would oppose any of us giving some opportunity, but I don't want one more list from some outsider that tells me it's going to solve the problems, because it's not. So I would like our staff to say maybe this will solve the problem, and we support them. It's a long-winded way of giving some staff some flexibility.
Thank you. Commissioner Neff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 100%, there's no doubt things that are working, things that are not working, that we all, each of us and staff here, recognizes, so we should get into it. I just wanted to bring to everybody's attention that my intention to bring to the board next meeting as an agenda item, we'll be seeing FRI. I'd like to bring an item that is really more getting at a county policy, which is to direct a percentage of those funds to safety improvement projects. We can do that within our authority. I think we should do it. We'll provide more details along with the agenda item, but I just wanted to provide a little bit of context in advance so that if people have thoughts, they can weigh in when that item comes up. But I think that's really important, that as we have this obligation and opportunity to move forward with the ability that the state gave us, that it's combined with true safety improvement projects. There's an element of the Office of Traffic Safety that's involved in supplying those projects, and that those funds are dedicated and separately sourced for that purpose. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Just following up on Commissioner Kirkpatrick's comments, I just want to acknowledge that our planning department's Director Rial is working with Bob Leek on identifying AI providers out there that can go through our process and see if there are some improvements on that. So I know they're being very proactive on that and fully support that. And then following up on Commissioner Naft, I think yes, for sure, safety improvements need to be top of the list as we move forward with FRI funds. But also, I think we do need to revisit some of the conversations we've had over the years that never really got implemented. So Vision Zero should be our priority. We should have that in policy. And also Complete Streets. We talked about it. It's been on agendas, but it's never actually been adopted by our Public Works Department. So I think that's, as part of this discussion, needs to be incorporated in it.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Commissioners, your next item is to approve and ratify the appointment of Daniel Stewart to the vacated position of Clark County Deputy Manager.
I'll go ahead and move the approval and ratify Daniel Stewart to the position of Deputy County Manager. Mr. Chair, should we take the motion first and then allow Mr. Stewart to speak? Motion on the floor for approval.
All right, there's a motion. Cast your vote. Motion is
it
adopted.
Hasn't posted yet. Oh, all right.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice Chair and members of the Commission. This is an incredible opportunity. I couldn't be more grateful for this opportunity. One thing I'd like to say is just in the short time I've been here so far, I've been absolutely blown away with the professionalism, the expertise, the knowledge on issues. I couldn't even imagine how broad they've been already, and the grace they've shown somebody coming in and trying to learn on the fly. I look forward to helping out in any way, whether it's emerging issues, emergency issues, or so forth, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Commissioners, your next item is to appoint a qualified nominee to fill a vacancy in the Nevada Assembly District 19, vacated by Assemblymember Toby Urich for the remainder of a term to expire upon next regular election from the following list of nominees received by Minority Leader of the Assembly, Gregory Hafen. Jason Patchett, or take other action as deemed appropriate.
Thank you, Commissioner Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a part of me that is very much conflicted about approving this move. Because under our rules, that means that he will be resigning as a member of the Civil District Attorney's Office, and he has provided remarkably good and sound counsel to Public Works and others as he's done his job. But I've known Jason since he was a little boy. In fact, I promised Jason I'm not going to tell the things that I know about you. He is... an extraordinarily talented fellow. He's been now exposed to the things that happen in Clark County. He knows something more about the obstacles and the challenges that we face and the difficulties that arise when the legislators are trying to consider all of the different aspects of issues. I think that he can be helpful to us and hope that he will consider that a primary responsibility. And after that, I move the appointment of Jason Patchett to fill the vacancy in the Nevada Assembly District 19.
All right, there's a motion for approval. Cast your vote. Motion is adopted. Congratulations.
Vice Chair McCurdy, Commissioners, thank you so much for this opportunity and for your vote, your support. Your continued support is much needed and much appreciated. I also like to thank County Council Lisa Loxton and her team for the incredible opportunity that I've been given to work under her guidance and leadership. What an incredible office that is. Kevin, your team is fantastic. I've gotten to know you and the others, and trust me when I say there's no one better than the county management on the sixth floor. Although I tend not to go up to the sixth floor much if I can avoid it, but they are good people and good folks. I am deeply honored by this appointment and the trust that goes with it. I, at the same time, recognize that I've not been appointed to be honored, but I've been appointed to serve. And I look forward for the opportunity to serve the constituents in Assembly District 19. And I look forward to the opportunity to work with many folks across many different avenues of life. I have a deep appreciation for Nevada, born and raised in Henderson. And I know Jim Gibson very well. And he has secrets about me, but I have some of his. But you know, he's a great mentor of mine, and I enjoy the relationship that I have with him and his family, and specifically one of his sons, who is a dear friend of mine. So With that, I again thank you, and I look forward to the opportunity in this new role and appreciate your sound support and guidance. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next item is to appoint up to 7 qualified individuals to serve on the Combined Board of Building Appeals for a 4-year term ending November 4th, 2029 from the following list of applicants: Matthew Dicka, Brad Ginzer, Michael Gentile, Walter Jones III, Robert Potter, Rocco Prock, and Steve Schiller. No relationship to me.
Good morning, welcome.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Jim Guerin. I'm the director of the Clark County Building Department. I just wanted to provide some clarification on item 42. We did put this forward and said 7. You can appoint 7 names. Unfortunately, we received 7 applications, and we only actually have 6 seats that those 7 people can fit into, so I need to clarify that. The Combined Board of Building Appeals consists of 8 members, and the Clark County Code, Section 2202.155, says you can only appoint 1 architect registered in the state of Nevada, 1 general contractor, 1 Nevada licensed general contractor, 1 Nevada licensed structural engineer, 1 residential construction industry representative, 1 master electrician, 1 mechanical engineer registered in the state of Nevada, and 1 layperson. We had an architect whose term does not expire until next year, so that's not up for reappointment. We did not receive any applications for the last spot, which is the amusement and transportation systems industry representative. Unfortunately, the current, the incumbent whose term expired last month, she declined to apply for reappointment, and we did not receive any other applications for that spot. So the 7 applications we did receive are for the general contractor, structural engineer, residential construction industry rep, master electrician, mechanical engineer, and layperson. Of the 7 applications we got, 6 are incumbents. Those are Robert Potter from Affordable Concepts for the general contractor, Steve Schiller, no relation to Kevin, from John A. Martin and Associates for the structural engineer, Matthew Dyka from Pulte Homes for the residential construction industry rep, Rocco Prock from Cooper Roofing and Solar for the master electrician, Brad Geinzer from BRG Consulting Limited for the mechanical engineer, and Michael Gentile from PCNA Consulting Group Incorporated for the layperson. The 7th application we received was from Walter Jones III from Faith Vision Builders. He applied for the positions of general contractor and residential and or residential construction industry representative. So as you consider this agenda item before you today, you would have to appoint 6 out of the 7, and for general contractor, you would have to select either Robert Potter or Walter Jones III, and for residential construction industry rep, you would have to select either Matthew Dyka or Walter Jones III. The other incumbents are running unopposed, essentially.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Director Guerin, for that clarification. I'm going to move for the appointments of Matthew Dyka, Brad Ginzer, Michael Gentile, Robert Potter, Rocco Prock, and Steve Schiller, which would be the appointments for the incumbents to remain on that board. Move for approval.
All right, there's a motion. Cast your vote. Motion is adopted.
Commissioners, your next item is to appoint 3 qualified individuals to serve on the Clark County Building Enterprise Fund Advisory Committee for a 4-year term ending November 4th, 2029 from the following list of applicants: Ann Barnett, Jordan Cramble, and Louis Montenegro.
Welcome again.
Good morning, commissioners. Jim Guerin from the Clark County Building Department again. Real quick, I just wanted to highlight the application we received from Louis Montenegro. We have had a vacant seat for the gaming industry representative. It's not mandated by law or county code to have a gaming industry representative sit on the Building Enterprise Fund Advisory Committee, but since such a large portion of our enterprise fund comes from projects in that industry, we always strive to have them represented on our board advisory committee, and so we are very excited to have that gentleman apply. Virginia Valentine did help us solicit applications for the gaming industry, so I would like to thank Virginia for her efforts on behalf of the building department. With that, I'd answer any questions you might have about the 3 applicants.
Commissioner Neff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move for the appointment of Ann Barnett, Jordan Cremble, and Luis Montenegro.
There's a motion. Cast your vote. Motion is adopted.
Commissioners, your next item is to appoint Lucinda Como, Mandy McKellar, Diane Lowe, and Holly Stavursky to serve as administrative hearing officers for the Department of Family Services for a three-year term from November 4th, 2025 through November 2nd, 2028.
Commissioner Neff.
Mr. Chair, I move the appointments of Lucinda Como, Mandy McKellar, Diane Lowe, and Holly Stavursky.
All right, there's a motion. Cast your vote. Motion is adopted. Thank you.
Commissioners, your next item is in accordance with NRS 4.032, appoint additional members to the panel of Justice of the Peace Pro Tem as substitutes for Justice of the Peace effective December 31st, 2026 for Henderson Justice Court, Taylene R. Pandute, Esquire.
Commissioner Neff.
Move the appointment of Taylene R. Pandute.
All right, there's a motion. Cast your vote. Motion is adopted.
Commissioners, your next item is to approve and adopt the 911 surcharge five-year master plan to enhance the emergency reporting telephone system and oversee any related surcharge pursuant to NRS 244A.7643 or take other action as appropriate.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Commissioners. Billy Samuels, Fire Chief of Clark County Fire. First, thank you for the opportunity to bring this to your attention and some of the gaps that we have. I want to talk about two things. I want to talk about the history of the 911 system, and then I also want to get into the operational component that we have in Clark County. In 1995, the federal government did allow a surcharge to be imposed or levied on a 911, on the 911 cell phone usage. However, Clark County did not fit in that realm because our population was over 700,000. In 2011, Clark County did have the opportunity to, and the authority to actually impose that surcharge at 25 cents. We chose not to do that. In 2017, we did have the opportunity, though, to still put it up there to, for a dollar. Again, we have decided not to impose that levy or even to come to you for that, that request. However, we're at a point in our 911 dispatching systems that, that we're, we have a gap and a shortcoming. When you look at the current operations that we have, a lot of it is basically composed of analog system. The analog system can be affected through different parts of the country. In April of 2024, we had a line break. For 3.5 hours, we were without the 911 system on what we normally would use due to a tree and digging roots in Kansas City, Missouri. That affected our 911 operations. We lost about 20% of our calls that came in through that system. We did have a backup system. It was called Rapid SOS. However, we did miss calls during those 3.5 hours. Two other times, most recently an occurrence occurred with the same analog system in Sandy Valley. About 3 weeks ago, we were disrupted with the system. Moving forward to today, there is a system in place. We did conduct an after action in June of 2024 from the April incident, and one of those recommendations was goes to Next Gen 911. That is a digital system that does a couple things. One, it lets the callers actually send videos and text messages to the dispatch center. Two, it actually gives a better pinpoint on where the customers are or the people that are calling are at. Probably one of the more important things in our valley, it actually has a Z-axis, which means we can go vertical. We know exactly where these people are calling from elevated locations, like on our high-rises. It'll also give us the implementation on our dispatching, going back and forth to LVMPD, to the Combined Communication Center, which is fire for Clark County, Las Vegas Fire and Rescue, and the Combined Community, North Las Vegas. We did ask all the other cities, since we were putting this forth to this commission, to actually send their letters of support, which the incorporated cities did that as well. I'm happy to answer any questions on the reason and the why, and Damon Harris from LVMPD is here to answer any of the fiscal side.
Thanks, Chief. Any questions or comments from members of the board?
I don't have any questions, so
I just want to clarify a few things. So this is the first step. And there'll be more contact with this board, and the advisory board will work, and all of that will be funneled up, right? I just want to be able to explain to my constituents the importance of this and what that means to them. So this is the first step for the future.
Yes, ma'am. We will, after this, with your approval, we will move forward with that, creating that ordinance, and also doing a business impact statement. Then the constituents have their opportunity to kind of give their replies on it as well. It's about a 40-day process, so we're going to come back here sometime in December or hopefully early January and ask for that request and give those impacts and where we're actually at. So we do have that opportunity.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Gibson.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief. The concern I think we have is that we want to enable the development so that we can update everything and never have a tree falling over end up interrupting our 911 capacity. On the other hand, we don't want to just grant authority to charge some number that doesn't relate yet to real detail in terms of what we're going to be getting. And so as you will enable all of that, and that'll happen over the course of time, and then you'll also be working to help us understand each of the pieces and parts and what their cost is going to be. And that'll we want to know that because in due course, whether we set a number of, say, for instance, $10 a landline, how much of that is really required is something that you'll come back and help us understand. And I think it's really important for us, as Ms. Kirkpatrick has just said, that we help the ratepayer understand why. And it is in order for us to accomplish the construction, the implementation of all of these things that are really overdue. That's just important for you to come back and help us stay current on that.
Yes, sir. Thank you for that. And I'll let Damon talk on the fiscal part. When you do talk about on where that money goes and how it's awarded, the advisory group that will be committee that has two voting members from each municipality, the incorporated cities, the county, and then LVMPD, they would advise the board, all of you, on where they would recommend those monies to go to fund the PSAPs, the public safety answering points, and the secondary side as well. So the board would have the authority and the ability to actually say, yes, we approve that project or no. So it does lay in your hands on that part. And then if Damon wants to talk on the fiscal side.
Yeah, Chief articulated it very well. Just add to that is basically the advisory committee is going to basically come down with a recommendation of how they feel that the money should be spent. Obviously, that'll contain the backup that you're speaking to in terms of specifically what is that money going towards. And then this board will end up having the approval authority in order to move that forward.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If there isn't any further, thank you for getting us to this point. Reflective of the comments that we just heard, I move for approval and adoption of the 911 surcharge 5-year master plan.
There is a motion. Cast your vote. Motion is adopted. Thank you.
Commissioners, your next item is to consider and approve the business impact statement pursuant to NRS Chapter 237 for the proposed amendments to Title 4 of the Clark County Code, Chapter 4.07, to impose a limit on additional taxes on vehicles, fuels, and increases in taxes on vehicles, fuels, as authorized by Assembly Bill 530 of the 2025 regular session of the Nevada Legislature, and providing for other matters properly related thereto.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair. Commissioners, Mike Harwell for Business License. This is an ordinance that would allow the continuation of the indexing of fuel tax through 2036. This was through an ordinance that the AB 530 allows the local governments to do. We sent the notification letter out for this ordinance, posted it in the paper twice, and sent it out to all the chambers of commerce, trade associations, and several businesses, associated businesses, and we received no comments. So I don't, I'm here for any more questions you have. When this was originally adopted, that we got many comments, but they were in favor of it because they were looking forward to all the construction jobs, road construction jobs that would be created by that original ordinance. So.
Thank you. And if that completes your presentation, I'll turn over to members of the board. Commissioner Becker.
I have a question. When I looked at this, I wanted to know exactly what was being limited by this ordinance.
I didn't draft the ordinance. I think the limitation is that it's limited to the increase in CPI. And the limitation is in 2036, this has to go before the vote of the public before it can be extended beyond that, I believe.
So this is regarding a fuel index tax that was set to expire in 2026?
I believe so, yes.
So
increases.
Can I just get Jessica Colvin for the record? The tax itself, the index wasn't set to expire, but the ongoing indexing or increases were set to expire.
Okay. So that being said, what exactly is the limitation that's going to be proposed by this ordinance? Because I'm just reading, I'm new, so I'm just trying to understand. And when I read the agenda, it said it's a limitation. So I couldn't figure out what exactly was being limited.
Well, it does limit the increases to the CPI on an ongoing basis. And then it requires, the limitation is at the end of 2036, it would require a vote of the public to go beyond that date for continued indexing, as I understand it.
So what's being limited is that it's being limited to 2036?
Yes.
So the what was set to expire was 2026, but we're limiting it to 2036 now? So I'm just trying to understand.
Well, this ordinance would extend that, would extend the fuel indexing. If we didn't do the ordinance, it's my understanding that the indexing, with future indexing, would end at the end of next year.
So we're extending it.
Yeah, we're extending it to 2036. And then at that time, unless there's a change in state law, I believe that it has to go back before the vote of the public to go beyond that for continued indexing.
So what was changed in the legislature in 2025 that would require that? Because it was already supposed to go to a vote of the people.
The bill that passed this year allowed the local government to, by ordinance, continue the extending of the indexing through 2036 without having to go back to the vote of the public. But then on 2036, then they have to go back to the vote of the public, unless, I guess, there's a change in state law again.
Unless they change it again. Okay. Thank you for clarifying that.
Commissioner Johns.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I think this is critical, and I appreciate that there were no adverse impacts that were noted in during the business impact statement. So I'd go ahead and move for approval of the business impact statement.
We have a motion for approval. Please cast your vote. Motion is adopted. Thank you.
Commissioners, your next item is to consider and approve the business impact statement pursuant to NRS Chapter 237 for the proposed amendments to Title 5, Chapter 5.01, and Title 6, Chapter 6.13 of the Clark County Code to provide for the granting of a franchise agreement for broadband service and or broadband infrastructure access, require a business license, add definitions, establish fees, and providing for other matters properly related thereto.
Mike Harwell for Business License Department again. This is based on another state law that was adopted this year. This, in the past, the only way that a broadband-only company could come to the county and ask for permission to access the rights-of-way was through a telecommunication franchise. Our limitations with that was in state law that we can only charge a telecom company 5% of intrastate revenue from telecom services. And a broadband provider can only provide, has no telecom services. So 5% of zero results in zero fees to the county. And that's what's been happening. This bill that was adopted earlier this year allows the county to enter into franchise agreements with broadband-only companies. They don't need a PUC certificate, but it allows them to access the rights-of-way to put their facilities in our rights-of-way and allows us to charge a fee of up to 2%. Of gross revenue, which is what is in the bill that was introduced. We sent the notification letter out to, we published it in the paper, sent it out to various companies in the Chambers of Commerce and Trade Associations. We received one comment from Gigapower. They believe that the 2% that was adopted by the state was the maximum that they could ever be charged by the county for anything that they do. It's my understanding that there's another ordinance that's working its way through from Public Works that has some fees attached to it for access to the rights-of-way when you're constructing in the rights-of-way, lane closure fees and such. And they felt that this 2% would be covered all that, and that's not. This is 2% is for a business to operate in our rights-of-way and use our rights-of-way, public rights-of-way, for commercial purposes. The fees that the Public Works charges is for construction work that are impacting traffic and other things. I don't know if they're here today, but other than, I don't know if they'll be coming to the public hearing, but that was the only comment that we received.
Commissioner Kirkpatrick.
Thank you. So, Mr. Harwell, when it does become a public hearing, I feel like I've been pretty clear on this is one piece of the privilege of being in our right-of-way, and then you have to pay all the other fees like everybody else. And long before the legislation passed, this is why I specifically did not want to approve any of these things, because we didn't have a policy in place. So I find it offensive, and I can't believe they are literally live here if they are saying this, because I think I know for sure I've been very clear, but I'd like us to pull the minutes, the video, to my crazy talk on why are we doing this, what's the plan for penalties if they tear up someone's right away and then they don't replace it. So I feel like we, we got to tell the story, because I didn't want to do this to begin with, but it's here now. Thank goodness the state did something, because the whole reason we're here is because they did nothing the prior session. And now we got ourselves into a pickle, but I would be curious if this company is a local company, because if they are, they've not paid attention to any of the meetings, and I want to be sure that we're clear on what the history has been, because sometimes that gets lost in a shuffle, and at the end of the day, it's a privilege to be in our right-of-ways 100% of the time, because we have a responsibility to constituents to ensure that they can use those sidewalks. And, you know, there's Michelle could probably go back to a little farther history. When did we start this? In 2016, maybe? Before it was a thing, but I want to know also if they got any of our grants, because I would have specifically said it within the motion, right, that it would be retroactive and this is how it would work, right? So I just want to be prepared, because a lot of times people don't think we think things out, and we spent a lot of time on this in particular. But with that, I'm happy to make a motion to accept this report.
All right, we have a motion to accept the report by Commissioner Kirkpatrick. Please cast your vote. Motion is adopted. Thank you.
Commissioners, your next item is to consider and approve the business impact statement pursuant to NRS Chapter 237 for the proposed amendments to Clark County Code Title II, Chapter 2.70, to rename the Sports and Special Events Department to the Office of Sports and Special Events, revise approval requirements, establish fees, and providing for other matters properly related thereto.
Welcome.
Again, Mike Harwell for Business License. This is my third and last business impact statement today, so this is an ordinance. Previously there was an ordinance adopted to create Chapter 2.70 for the Special Sports and Special Events Department. What this ordinance does, it changes the name of the department to the Office of Sports and Special Events. This notification letter was sent out to all the trade associations, chambers of commerce, liquor caterers, and many other related businesses. We received 6 comments. Based on those comments, we made revisions to the original ordinance. One was to clarify that exempt entities are also exempt from the fees. There was some confusion that they thought that they're exempt from the the application process, but they thought that someone might think they have to pay the fees too, but this clarifies that. Also, we removed drones and pyrotechnics from the definition of special events. This was to appease individual drone operators and others that thought they might be trapped into this requirement to apply for a permit. Obviously, drones and pyrotechnics will have to go through other approvals through fire and other sources, airport. for big events anyway, so we removed that. And then we also added a major entertainment facility to the exempt entities from this ordinance. And based on that, we feel that we've addressed the concerns of the respondents. I'm here for any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for members of the board? Commissioner Nye.
Mr. Chair, if not, I move to approve the business impact statement.
We have a motion for approval. Cast your vote. Motion is adopted.
Thank you.
Commissioners, your next item is to discuss the creation of a Clark County Office of Veterans Services and direct staff accordingly. Commissioner McCurdy.
Thank you, Manager Schiller. Members of the board, I ask that we come together to discuss creating this Office of Veterans Services, not to be confused with the Office of Veteran Affairs. But I've been meeting with members of the veteran community for some time now, asking them what would be helpful to the majority of veterans that we have here within our region. And, you know, unequivocally, the response was that we should have an Office of Veterans Services within Clark County. I've also been in contact with the Nevada Department of Veterans Services as well, asking them how could we coordinate and also have the individual that would staff this office be certified and be an actual veteran service officer. There are multiple avenues that we can go to create this office, and I would like to ask for your support to ask County Manager Schiller to work with the Nevada Department of Veterans Services to create this position. And I do understand that we offer a lot of services to our veterans here within Clark County, but I'm looking for this individual to be able to have the opportunity to have all of that, all of those offerings consolidated within one office where they're easily accessible for our veteran community, as well as be able to provide services, applications, submittals, as well as reviewing claims for our veterans within Clark County. One thing I found during this time is that there are also some predatory things that are happening to our veterans within Clark County for initial submittal of claims. So I like to have Clark County have an officer, someone who is trusted and also who is certified, hopefully through NVDS or however we choose to proceed with the different options that we have available to us to be able to have veterans come to Clark County, have their claims submitted in a place and with an individual that they trust within this county, as well as hopefully help them get their initial benefits or get higher returns on their claims and the benefits that they should receive. I think that there is an economic issue to this. I think that there is a consumer protection issue to this, and I just want your support in directing County Manager Schiller to explore the different avenues that we have available to us to create this Office of Veteran Services. Commissioner Nett.
Thanks, Chairman. I'm happy to look at what options you and the manager come up with. I would just caution that I spent some time in this space. Every federal office in Southern Nevada and Northern Nevada too has in-house representatives who deal in Veterans Affairs issues, and they actually have an oversight role over the Department of Veterans Affairs and other federal agencies that actually have some decision-making authority. So I just want to make sure we're not being redundant, and the same thing to be said for the, I mean, there are countless VSOs that operate in the community, and so if it's additive, happy to look at it. If it's in our lane, we already at the county have a very wide lane, so I just don't want to expand that outside of what we already have tremendous purview over. And then being cognizant, obviously, of our limited resources here, just make that clear.
For sure. Yeah, and that was one of the things that did come up, making sure that we weren't duplicative in these efforts, but more so just having someone that would be a point of contact within Clark County, coordinated with NBDS, as well as folks from the VA. But, you know, open to just having the conversation. If it comes back to where it's not feasible or it doesn't make sense, you know, definitely we'll back off. But based on the feedback and some of the consensus around the meetings that have been had, I think it would be additive.
Mr. Chairman, I want to point out a situation that I found myself in Mesquite. Mesquite City, and we received 100 people that said, "How dare you, Clark County, not have a veteran services?" I said, hey, not for nothing. It's not my lane, it's the state's lane, and they have a system. And so we did a town hall, we brought the state and said, This is not what we do. Social service, sure, we can give you all of these things, but the state at the time was actually struggling to even fill the positions from the local areas of people that had enough knowledge to direct them. So when you talk about being certified, I'm trying to understand what that is, because the state today does not certify. And so this is why the state referred them to 211, but I don't want to get into a situation, I mean, that you now represent a portion of North Las Vegas that I had for a long time. They have a building there, but I mean, at the end of the day, they too don't necessarily have a person. So I just want to be very clear of what we're doing, because we will get the blame if we don't produce, because as I walked into a fiery town hall with 200 people in Mesquite, Perump has one, and I said, I understand that, but that's a state person. And as the state person said at the time, it's our job because we have the direct flow of federal dollars. I don't know, is there a model that we're looking at or something? But I don't want to take the blame, because I pride myself on constituency return calls and getting them in the right place and not taking them to a voicemail. This board has for years supported the Veterans Parade and all of those things. So I want to be clear before we go too far, what is that role? Right? I know we even offered, to be honest, Jessica will remember this, we even offered to pay the state an additional employee, and they couldn't find anybody to fill it out of my economic development money. I even went that far, right? So I just want to be clear, because if we two are only going to have one person, I don't know what that gets us in the long run, because if the state can't do that position, I'm not sure we can. But I want to be engaged before it gets too far with knowing what our responsibility is supposed to be.
Thank you. And no, that history is incredibly helpful. And I've tried to do my due diligence and just speaking, with folks here locally as well as at NVDS. And I was trying to identify, could Clark County certify their own veteran services officer? And no, the suggestion was to have NVDS, who was the only certifying body, be able to certify those officers. And there were some different ideas that were thrown around. But really, and more than anything else, I was appalled to learn about the number of veterans who are being sought after in a predatory manner for the initial claims that they're filing. And what I found is, in most cases, if they go to this entity, and they are, that initial claim is submitted, that veteran is giving up a large chunk of their benefit in perpetuity in many cases. And I thought that was egregious for initial claim filing. And also understanding that now, since we have additional federal policy that have been passed to allow for folks who've been exposed to burn pits and other claimable, instances in during their time in service, that there's going to be more dollars on the street all across the nation. So I just want to look at all of it, and I'm open to any and all suggestions, and I'm not stuck on it, but definitely want to bring it to this body for consideration and for conversation in a thoughtful way, and just ask that no decision be made today, but that we could agree that County Manager Shirley could look into it and report back, and if it came back that it was positive to the county, then we could do it, and if not, then I'll back off. Thank you.
I just want to say that I appreciate that, and I think that I've had some of the same issues with my constituents. Maybe it's something that the district attorney can look into, prosecuting some of these scams, and just maybe added protection for our veterans, and at least some type of help at the county to direct people to the federal programs that are out there, because sometimes that's all they need to. So I'm open to that.
Thank you. And Manager Shirley, just report back with all of us on what we find, and I'll work closely with you and everyone else on this. Thank you.
Commissioners, your next item is to direct staff to initiate the county's public auction process for property that is encumbered by a lease agreement with Nevada Links Incorporated, or direct staff accordingly. Just as a follow-up prior to your discussion, I think one of the key pieces in the direction to staff will be regarding whether the appraisal should be conducted with or without consideration of the lease. So I just wanted to lay that first prior to discussion.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I see Director Chrisley here. If you want to come forward, I know you have some comments to make.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Chair and fellow commissioners. Jim Chrisley, Department Director, Clark County Department of Aviation, for the record. I am here to recommend against the public auction of the 90-acre parcel of land owned by the county and currently leased by Nevada Links. The Department of Aviation has accepted federal grant funds under the Airport Improvement Program and is therefore obligated to manage airport land consistent with these federal grant assurances and to ensure the county's ability to secure future grant funding. This includes the express obligation to restrict the use of the land adjacent to or in the immediate vicinity of the airport to compatible uses with aviation operations. In that regard, the FAA takes the position that maintaining ownership over the land is the optimal means of protecting that land. Additionally, selling the property would trigger two separate FAA processes. First, approval and update to our airport layout plan, submission and approval, and second, approval for the land use change. Both of these actions will require a detailed environmental review under the National Environmental Policy Act. Most importantly, the land is vital to protecting the airport's operations, airspace, and future flexibility. The airspace around the airport is already limited, and any loss of this land could hinder our ability to accommodate growing air traffic and meet the needs of current and future operations. Given these considerations, I recommend the board not proceed with this proposal. Maintaining county ownership of the land is the best way to safeguard the operations at Harry Reid International Airport and to preserve the ability to meet our community's future aviation demands. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Director Chrisley. I appreciate those comments. Just to start with a little bit of history here, this you can have a seat. I'm sure if there's questions, they'll ask you to come back. But this lease was originally signed in 1999, long before anybody was here, long before anybody was in management there. There are, though, 73 years left in this lease. It's a participatory lease. It is not yielding much of anything for the county or for the taxpayers here. And you contrast that with some of what truly is some of the most valuable opportunity for economic development in Southern Nevada. You have prime real estate. You have contrast that with the potential conservation impact, saving 12 billion gallons over the life of this lease that's remaining. And I think we owe it to taxpayers here to find a way that we can both navigate the important comments that were just raised by Department of Aviation with the need to ensure that we're being mindful that just allowing a 73-year lease that is not benefiting taxpayers to just continue on for that amount of time, I think, is unreasonable. And so the proposal here is specifically to the northern 90 plus or minus 1 acres of land that could have some higher and more beneficial use to residents in Southern Nevada. And so that is really all we're talking about. So the most impacted land, the piece of this of these parcels that is most impactful to the Department of Aviation, I believe to the Federal Aviation Administration, it would remain under the lease. All of this would remain after an auction in the hands of both the FAA to approve any future uses, but also in the hands of this body and in Clark County through our entitlement process to approve any future use on, again, just the 90 acres to the north. So those considerations will have an opportunity to be heard. This land is encumbered by a lease that should and I think must be considered as part of the auction process. And that would be consistent with every other participatory land auction that the county has done, to my knowledge. So I'm happy to, if there are any questions or comments from the board, Otherwise, consistent with Clark County's process, I move to direct staff to initiate the public auction process for the property, which is encumbered by a lease agreement. And again, for the record, that auction would be inclusive of any deed restrictions placed by the Department of Aviation and FAA and Clark County zoning board's approvals. And again, that's in the form of a motion.
Thank you. Could I just comment?
Please.
I wholly support the motion. The reality is that the property in question could be used in ways that were entirely consistent with the needs of the airport and at the same time spin off incredible opportunities for development, for revenue to our accounts. The federal government, of course, will always want to protect the airport, and in deference to the airport, I mean, it is the lifeblood of the community. We would never approve a project or uses that would be conflicting. But the revenue in terms of sales tax, employment opportunities, the incredible location proximate to proximate to the Strip and other developments that are close nearby, I think compel us to think seriously about and to consider affirmatively taking the action that is suggested by Commissioner Naft. And of course, it makes no sense to attempt to sell it without the lease. So I think that if to the extent that we can change the uses over there and be careful in the way that we always are careful when it comes to development in and around the airport, we would be serving the public well. We would be responding to the things that the federal government has actually said to us, both informally and in litigation, because it is not like we haven't litigated around the lease that is already there. Of course, everything to the south remains in the runway protection area. It needs to continue to be protected. There's no reason to lift the lease there. The uses all have to have had to and will have to continue to be entirely compatible with the restrictions of federal law and the uses of the airport. So I encourage us all to unanimously support this motion.
Thank you, Commissioner Gibson. I would just add for the record that this direction should include directing the Department of Aviation to begin the process of amending the airport layout plan, which would be required to move forward with the auction process. Otherwise, my motion stands.
There's a motion. Cast your vote. Motion is adopted. This is the second time set aside for public comment. Anyone wishing to come forward at this time, please come forward, state your name, and you will be allotted 3 minutes. Please come forward now at this time. Welcome.
I have a handout for the commissioners.
You can just hand it to the clerk to your right.
My name is Tim Ross, 2537 Day Spring Street, Las Vegas, and I'm a member of the North Las Vegas Hangar Owners Group. We've been here several times. And we have an important mission now. Our air traffic controllers, you were just saying that the airport is the lifeblood of the community. And we are at North Las Vegas Airport. And of course, now we're all affected by the federal shutdown. The air traffic controllers have a very important job. They keep our airspace safe. They keep the aircraft separate, avoiding mid-air collisions and things like that. And they're required to work because they have a very important job and they're not being paid at this time. So our VGT Hangar Owners Group is now supporting this group with our food drive. And this shows our last food drive there. We took a truckload of food to the North Las Vegas Air Traffic Control Tower. And this paper I've handed out is for the commissioners and County Manager Schiller. If you would like to join us in supporting the air traffic controllers that are working now without pay, we're going to make another donation. Our donation will be this Thursday at 10 a.m. If you'd like to join us, any of you, all of you, would like to join us for this, to show our support with the group there, you're welcome to join us. And it's just a very important job that they do. They keep our airspace safe, and our North Las Vegas Hangar Owners Group is there to support them We made it our mission to support them. We're greatly affected by them. The community is greatly affected by them. And we'd like to invite you to join us Thursday if you have time on your schedules to join us. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Welcome.
Hello, my name is Heidi Strauss, and I'm the curator of the exhibition that is out in your rotunda. Currently, it's called The Choices of Man Through the Lens of the Holocaust, and we are Nevada Holocaust Museum by Nevada Center for Humanity. Thank you for hosting us in your home for what I hear is one of the longest engagements you've ever had. Commissioner Naft has championed our engagement here, and Parks and Recreation has been integral in making it smooth and just an elegant environment, and maybe the nicest environment I could imagine, and I really don't want to leave. So we are open until January 29th of 2026. I invite everyone in Clark County to come and tour the exhibition. It's free. We have self-guided tours, and from time to time we'll have guided tours, but we do want to keep the dance card available for schools, which we are working on booking lots and lots of Clark County students. That said, every day at 4 o'clock is a virtual reality film. To encourage visitors to return here, we have 5 different films. Every 2 weeks they will change. So you're all invited, and the commissioners for a private showing. So just reach out. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hello, my name is Grace Albanese, A-L-B-A-N-E-S-C. And they're trying to throw me out of the Clark County Law Library. The librarian's Summer Chantel Gale, Marilyn and Tanner. And I don't know if you've been in there recently. It was constructed back in the 60s. There's no cameras. This is over on Bridger and 3rd. The law librarians never have to walk in the common area where us common folks have to walk. There's like a secret passageway for the law librarians to walk through so they don't have to walk in the common area to go from one end of the circulation desk or the customer service desk to the other. And it's like a secret passageway. You don't see them. It's enclosed just to walk behind the customer service desk so they don't have to walk, you know, amongst us common folks. And this is where they want to throw me out, over on Bridger and 3rd, Summer and Chantel and Marilyn and Tanner and Gail. They'll stand behind me and talk about me. I guess they're getting posts on their phone, and they like to read them out loud behind me. The posts are about me, very negative and critical. There's no cameras. There needs to be cameras in the law library. There's also empty shelves where they're taking down all these the law books, not putting them back up. There's just all these empty shelves there. There's a wall of doors where you can come out one door and go into another door right beside it, and you're in a completely different room. This is constructed totally in the 60s with no cameras, where these law librarians can, you know, hide from the public because they're not, you know, so they're behind this wall of doors. And you can't see them. It needs to be replaced with, like, glass or something where we can see, you know, behind what they're doing. So I'll go in there, and I'll hear all these doors closing, and I look around, and I don't see anybody. They go out one door in another, and they're in a completely different room. So we need a completely, you know, remod of the law library. It hasn't been remodeled in years. There needs to be cameras to see what they're hiding. They want me thrown out. I told you who they are, standing behind me whispering. Why? You know, they're so used to working in this secret environment, apparently. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Welcome.
Good morning, commissioners. My name's Lori Rouskin. I reside at 5015 Titanium Avenue, 89120, Commissioner Jim Gibson's district. I was here exactly 1 year ago regarding the property and the people, and I use the term loosely, next door at 4991 regarding a chop shop mechanic operation over there. Nothing's been done, nothing's going to get done, and I'm very frustrated by the whole thing, but it is what it is. They're bringing my property values down, in my opinion, and there's no consequences over there. They've been there for almost 5 years now, so I don't know why nothing can be done, but code enforcement was there, but they always came when they were not there. I filled out business license, Metro, DMV, and so I guess they knew that all along, because this is the third set of people since I've lived there that's had this operation going. So just wanted to bring it to your attention, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Seeing no one else, we'll stand in recess until tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.